I'm Jerry Barmash, and this is Here Now the News. After a stint at NBC News, Michelle Kaczynski moved to CNN, where she's best known to viewers. During the 6 years, she had key assignments in Washington, covering the last two presidencies. While part one covers the Capitol siege and aftermath, in this episode, Michelle talks about some positives taking place in the country. Also in part two of our conversation, she talks about the major difference between covering the Trump and Obama administrations, her time at the cable news network, the choice to move on, and what's in store today as the competition.
And then I also am podcasting now. So
that's right. I want to ask you about that as well.
For us old people, right?
Been watching you for a long time at the State Department. I didn't even realize that you had left, I guess, in the middle of obviously everything going on with COVID, and you weren't there.
Well, it's funny because at CNN, there are so many people, and it's such a rotation. And, you know, the Trump White House has gathered every eyeball and every brain cell of everybody in the news for such a long time that if you are working somewhere else, like covering the State Department or sometimes, you know, the Pentagon or some other part of the government, it's possible you're not seen or heard from for months and months, depending on where the interest is. So I don't blame people for not necessarily noticing that I left. But I left in February, and my contract was coming due. So we talked about it for a while, but my husband and kids moved back to Europe. And I stayed in Washington because we were busy for a good long time there, you know, with all the foreign policy issues that have been happening. And it just seemed like every day there was some new controversy or giant question mark with North Korea or Iran and what was going to happen. And were we going to, you know, do airstrikes for this or that? So there was so much going on. I stayed. But then, you know, staying longer turned into 2 years of me being based in Washington and my husband being in Switzerland and us just commuting back and forth. And then when my contract was up, you know, we just decided it was going to take some huge, you know, something basically I couldn't say no to make me stay in DC. And, you know, CNN was great. I just didn't want to do another contract of 3 years and just keep doing the State Department. Like it just didn't justify me being apart from my family for another long time.
Were there other choices on your table? Did you want to get into anchoring? Were there other spots you wanted to go to?
Yeah. And what was sad for me, it was such a hard decision to leave because I love news. I'm really addicted to it. And it's so hard to turn away, even though the State Department wasn't exactly the most happening place. It wasn't the big story every day. It was still hard to kind of go into the unknown. And CNN had me doing anchoring in the morning, which I loved. That was kind of a new skill to work on. And there are a lot of things I'd like to do, though. To be honest with you, I really love interviewing. I love long-form storytelling. I love digging and investigating. And some of those, you know, you really could do in the position that I was in for the last 3 years. Certainly digging for information was a daily fun task to be done. And it's a huge thrill to break news. That's what hurts when I'm not doing it on a daily basis anymore. But we didn't do very much interviewing. We hardly ever did longer pieces. There just wasn't the time to really kind of work on one story for a long period of time. And I really missed that. So I thought, you know, now is the time that my contract is up. It's time to, first of all, be with my family. And secondly, maybe do some of those things that just in some other medium that aren't happening in television news in the United States right now. Do something else that I really love. And storytelling is what I love the most. So interestingly, doing a podcast it's been invigorating. It's creative storytelling again. It's very long, deep interviews, which I haven't done in ages. And when I started, I thought, oh my God, do I even remember how to do this? It felt foreign to me, and it shouldn't feel foreign as a journalist. So it was, you know, it's a hard switch going from breaking news to more, you know, just telling stories about something else that isn't pressing and urgent and of national or international importance. But I feel like that kind of storytelling and creativity is what I needed for my soul. I was at CNN for 6 years, 3 years at the White House, the last 3 years of Obama, and then 3 years at the State Department. And then before I went to CNN, I was based in London for a number of years. So I was a foreign correspondent. And then before that, I was still at NBC, but I was based in Miami. So I covered national stories throughout the US, but I also traveled to South America quite a bit to cover stories there. So
you must enjoy that too. Like you get from, you know, the White House, obviously that's a, you know, minute by minute things are changing, and then overseas where just the adventure of that, I guess.
Yeah, I know. I'm so grateful, and I'm just beyond fortunate to have had those experiences that I had. It sometimes seems surreal. It seems like each period of time, each job was a lifetime unto itself. And so I miss those days. Sometimes I still have dreams that I'm overseas in a war zone, or it's weird. It's almost like they're separate parts of my brain, and I miss those places and those times. But it's not like you can ever go back. You just have to move on and move forward. There were great times, really great times. It's just that the industry keeps on changing, and you never know what it's going to be 5 years down the road. Like, I loved being a foreign correspondent, but it started out being, you know, covering terrorism in Europe and wars. And it ended up covering a lot of the royal family, which I got tired of pretty quickly. So even when you have your dream job and you finally got it, in the media industry, that dream job can kind of morph into something entirely unexpected in a couple of years. And then, you know, then you start to think, okay, it's time to find something new.
I was going to say, my dream is, I've been in radio for 30 years. There's like a deadline. You're doing updates every 10 minutes, and I'm late for that update. And I'm like, you wait a minute, and you forgot to do it or something like that. And I get that often. It comes up.
Yes. Oh, I know, Jerry. I feel you. I have dreams that I'm late for a live shot sometimes.
Exactly. It's the same. That's the same idea. Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
How much has being in that world messed with our brains? Yeah. I felt almost like I had forgotten how to have a normal life. I had forgotten how to be human and how to have a normal family life. I feel like I'm learning that now. And that's sad. That's the sad part.
So do you think time with your family, obviously you're doing the podcast, other things, which we'll talk more about that as well. And I also need the name of the podcast. What's the name of the podcast?
Well, I've been doing a podcast called The Perfect Scam, which is about scams, of course. But what I love about it is it's not the kind of scam that you think about, because whenever I say what I've been working on, people will say, oh yeah, like I know about this scam that's so crazy. And people call you and they say they're a Nigerian prince. And I'm like, okay, great. Yeah, that's a scam. But the scams that we've covered are like outrageous, outrageous scams. Like Ponzi schemes that have lasted 20 years, and they scammed their husband and their best friend and their dad, and they've, you know, people have lost everything, and just mind-blowing scams. So that has been really fun. And now I'm starting a new podcast that will be political. How can I describe it? It hasn't launched yet. It's just in the early stages, but it will be politics, but also humanity. it will mix human beings and politics, because as we all know, politics can be extremely inhuman. But I don't want to say too much about it, because it's brand new.
And but that will be interviews.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be good. It'll be politics, great storytelling, and great freaking interviews, which is one of my favorite things to do. And it is such a, what I love about this medium is that to sit down and speak to somebody about something that deeply affected them and talk to them about that for not 5 minutes, and then you have to choose a sound bite that is 10 seconds long here, and then maybe you can sneak in another 10 seconds long of them pouring their entire life story out to you and call that a story. That really bothered me about television. Now you can sit down and have an hour and a half long interview with somebody, and you can tell that whole story. You can just do it in segments. And I find that incredibly freeing. So, you know, I think whatever medium you're using or whatever job you're doing, you always kind of miss what you don't have. So of course I miss the visual aspect of it, but as many of my colleagues agree, when you're doing audio, it's like you don't have the video to get in the way anymore. You don't have to cover that great sound of the interview with something that's just going to distract somebody who wants to become immersed in it, you know? So I think there are definitely pros to just have audio, and you're kind of telling that story directly into someone's brain, and you don't have visuals and explosions. And right. Even though I loved that, and that's why I went into television in the first place, I'm really enjoying podcasting.
Yeah, I mean, it helps paint the picture when you're doing the audio. That's my radio background. Do you see yourself going back to TV down the line?
I would, for the right opportunity, and it would depend on what it was. I think there are times when you leave a job or you leave a field, there are times when you miss it and you think like, oh, I'd love to be doing that again. But then when you really think about it, and some people have come to me with possibilities in television, and I just had to say like, okay, well, maybe, but to be honest with you, it's kind of like been there, done that. And unless it feels new and it feels like a new challenge, I don't necessarily want to go back into a dying part of the industry. I would rather do something that's a little groundbreaking if possible, or something that's just more satisfying creatively.
When we have moments like this that are going on, we're recording this Friday, January 9th. Yeah.
Is it the 9th?
Is it? I don't
know. Oh, it's the 8th. It's the 8th. Okay. I thought.
I'm lucky I know it's Friday.
It's easy to lose track, right?
I haven't known Friday for 8 months. Who knows?
Exactly.
And working from home or whatever. I don't know. But when you have these major events that are going on, do you miss the day-to-day working?
Yes, I do. I do. But sometimes my husband reminds me. Like sometimes I will say, I'll actually voice, oh my God, it's driving me crazy not to be in the thick of it. Like for the first time in my life, I'm not on the front lines of, if not the big story, then a big story. But when it comes to Washington, sometimes my husband says, you would be hating it if you were there. You would hate it. You would be miserable. And many times he's right, because it's hell. Covering that morass is both a thrill and a living hell simultaneously. It's a real cesspool, but there are great people, you know, trying to live and breathe within that cesspool. So it's a worthwhile challenge is how I'll call it.
Is it hard in that navigating that cesspool, as you say, to get those stories, to get those scoops?
No, definitely. Everybody has an agenda, of course. So to develop trusted sources, and you have to hope that you can protect those sources as best you can, because, you know, especially within the Trump administration, everybody was running scared that you know, and then people, good sources of mine, got fired. So everybody's scared to talk. And of course, that's what the administration wants. But then principled people feel like the truth needs to get out. So there's always sources. But there's always unhappiness, and it's unhappiness often that breeds those sources. So there are always competing influences. And like I said, everybody has an agenda. Not to say that it's a malicious agenda, but everybody's point of view is coming from whatever their experience was. So you always have to know, where they're coming from and why are they giving you this information and why are they withholding that information?
Right.
So I just found it to be, that's why I couldn't leave. I stayed for two long, torturous years, you know, when I should have or could have left. But it's very addictive and you feel like you're helping in some way. And I think when you leave news, before you find something that is truly fulfilling again, you feel like, oh, I wish I could help in some way. So as a member of the media, I think maybe some people would scoff and say, you're not helping, you're hurting. But you want to be somebody who helps the national understanding.
Were you careful that, you know, you could be getting misinformation or lies from these people, these sources in the Trump administration?
Yeah. But I found that with my sources, I trusted them very much. Like that kind of trust builds over time. And when you understand the kind of information that they have and why they want to share it, where it's coming from, then you start to feel like, you know, of course you could be burned at any time if your source has bad information, but at CNN, we were extremely diligent about vetting. We almost never went with one source. That would be an extremely rare circumstance that you would have to justify at the highest levels of CNN. You would have to answer questions about that. And that would be sometimes days worth of discussions. So I'm sure other news organizations right now are the same way, but at CNN, I mean, you might have a great scoop and you knew it was true, but if you didn't have backup on that, it could be days before your scoop saw the light of day. And, you know, in that amount of time, you could be scooped by somebody else who has the same information, but was maybe doing less vetting or maybe had other good sources.
Right.
So, I didn't ever feel too nervous, but I think every journalist will admit that when you've gotten everything vetted by your team and your editorial staff at your organization, right before that story goes to publish or goes to air, you always have that little twinge of, if you're a careful, meticulous, to the point of almost being crazy person like I am, you always have that doubt, even to the very end of like, but what if? Like, right. did I dot all my I's and cross all my T's? And I always felt good about it. I never felt like sick to my stomach, like something was wrong. But I think what you saw a lot of times in the Trump administration is they would know you had a scoop, and then they would do the opposite thing, or they would wait on their announcement or not do their announcement because they wanted to not have the press be right and not have a leak have occurred. You know what I mean? Mm. So there was a lot of that going on, which I thought was pretty funny. It was always a kind of cat and mouse game.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's one of the biggest challenges, especially of working in Washington, is you have to, your sources have to trust you and you have to really trust them, because it could all backfire on everybody if something's not right.
Ahead, Michelle talks about the one word that separates a member of the media in the Trump years as opposed to the Obama White House.
What are some of the differences you saw in covering the Obama White House as opposed to covering the State Department for the Trump administration?
Oh, Jerry, where to begin?
Time.
12 hours and, you know, a book publisher and then we'll get it all out. I would say the number one shocker from the very beginning was the lies. Let's call them what they are. I mean, from day one, the lies. And of course, the Washington Post has done, I think, the best job of tracking each and every lie. But I'm not going to say that there weren't lies coming out of other administrations. And I know that there were some cover up, they were minor compared to the Trump administration, but in the Obama administration, I think there were things like somebody tried to change a transcript of a daily briefing at the White House. That was a big scandal because somebody tried to remove a couple of words. But, you know, the lies coming out of the president of the United States himself, and then him having these sycophantic people around him to be at the State Department and see really good, bipartisan people forced out or people accused of being biased because of their race or because of their ethnicity. Just the most outrageous things that you would never, ever expect that to be coming from your own government here in the United States. Never. It was nightmarish, the level of deception that this administration tried to pull off. And, you know, succeeded, I guess you could say. They stuck it out for 4 years.
Right. You know, you said scandal, and I was thinking, as soon as you said that, I was thinking two words came to mind. Tan suit. You remember that?
The Obama tan suit? Oh, the tan suit.
I mean, that became a scandal. Republicans
were on the network. No, that was more of a fashion nightmare. Than
faux pas. But they were going nuts. I remember, you know, different Republicans were like, and where are those days now?
Yeah, and some of this is very obvious. I mean, everybody knows that there are liars in this administration, and everybody knows that it was outrageous. So it gets to the point where you run out of words, you run out of horrible words to describe the horrible things that happened, and that, you know, America let happen. And so then you just think, well, maybe, you know, you can't wait until you can stop talking about it, because there really are not enough words to describe what it feels like as, first of all, a citizen, and secondly, as a member of the press trying to get the truth out and seeing this happen from your own government. It's heartbreaking. You know, all the words have been out there. It's really crushing to see, and you just have to hope. You just have to use this as an example for the ages and hope that no one lets this happen again.
Do you worry that there will be, even after we get to January 20th, that there will be not just in D.C., but violence in other cities?
Yeah, I always, when I'm in the United States, I worry about violence quite a lot. And I hate to see these people thinking that, you know, let's say there's a protest about civil rights, about people wanting things to be equal. You know, there are going to be bad apples in every group. But when you see a bunch of guys in a neighborhood lined up with their assault rifles, why do they feel like that's necessary? That kind of intimidation, I don't think, has a place in what America is supposed to be about. I just feel like that makes me sick. And when you worry about sending your kid to a school where they're going to get shot, it's just, I worry about violence a lot in America.
I want to end on a positive note.
Yeah, I know. Everything's depressing. What can we talk about that's, well, you know, to see, we can talk about the fact that you see places like Georgia turn around and reject Trumpism. Full on reject Trumpism. And I think now we all can freely, yeah, at the beginning of the Trump administration, I think the press was really careful. Oh, you can't say that about Trump, and you can't call that, let's not call it a lie, because he doesn't think it's a lie. You know, all of that nonsense. Now we're just calling it like it is, okay? But for them to reject that the things that Trump has espoused, for them to say that that's bad, we can all say that the things that Trump has done, especially recently, are not good for America. And to see voters in Georgia mobilize, voters that have been historically oppressed, for them to come out in those numbers and reject this, that fills me with hope for the United States. And I'm not some kind of flaming liberal by any means. No, I'm not. And I will call out BS on both sides. And I did when I covered the Obama administration. And I asked them those hard questions about Iran and healthcare and their tactics of trying to get around Republicans, you name it. We asked those questions and nobody remembers that. But what I don't agree with is lying. And, you know, espousing these things that are just, they don't represent equality or any kind of American values. And that's what Trump and his team have done. So it fills me with hope to see voters actually turn away from that. And that's, especially in Georgia. Like it's emotional for so many people. And I lived in Georgia
not a long time.
I was, I guess you could say technically based there for 2 years, but I was never there because I was always traveling. So did I really live there? I don't know. I had some friends there and I did a lot of stories there when I was in town, but it made me very emotional to see Georgia turn. And I remember all the racism that I saw there. Like the racism in this country is, it's a real, real problem. And I'm happy that it's coming to light and people are really fight. I don't even want to use the word fighting because right now fighting means, it means fighting.
Yeah.
People are turning, they're recognizing it a lot more and they're turning against things that let it continue. And that, there's plenty to hope for America out there, even though the past couple of weeks have been bleak beyond belief.
With Georgia, it kind of got obviously lost in all the breaking news, but they just threw in line, breaking news, projected the winner. And
you know what else fills me with hope? To see the kind of experience that Biden is assembling for his team.
Yeah.
All those really smart, smart people, some of whom served the Trump administration for a time, like Brett McGurk. And to see scientists, to see people bringing back some scientists, like hey, everybody, remember science? Let's look at that again. And to see their plans for at least trying to bring COVID to an end, not cover stuff up, let's hope,
right.
Not obstruct for political gain. Let's just try to assemble good teams with thinking people who are right for those jobs. And I'm hopeful to see that team. And that also kind of makes me sad to not be in America. Like I wanna be there to hopefully see some healing happen.
Are you going to come back?
I'll go back and forth because of the projects that I'm working on. So, yeah, I like to think I can be anywhere.
And now we're virtual. Are there any projects you want to talk about?
No, I don't want to say too much about my brand new one because it's so new. So, because I don't know where, like, as we start working on it, I don't know what it's really going to turn into, but I'm very excited about it. And, yeah, podcasting has been fun, and I really like, let's say, longer form stuff and documentaries. So let's see. I'm excited. I'm happy that this terrible, dark, unprecedented era in American history is coming to a close. God willing, Jerry, God willing, because we still got some days.
I know. And before, I mean, even the impeachment, there's still some days and it could get darker before the light. And hopefully, same thing with COVID, with the vaccines coming and hopefully it'll get better. If we can have you back, if there's, when you have something to talk about and promote, I'd love to talk.
Oh, that's nice. Anytime I can be of service. And it's such a pleasure to talk to such a great interviewer and somebody with such perspective as you. I really respect your work.
I appreciate that. And coming from you, that means a lot. I mean, I've watched you. I think you do a terrific job reporting.
Thank you, Jerry.
Good luck with the podcast.
Pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, thank you.
Be safe out there in America. Talk to you later.
My thanks again to Michelle Kaczynski. A reminder, if you haven't checked out part one of our interview, it's available now. Please share this or other episodes with friends. You can contact me with any questions or comments on Twitter at Jerry Barmash, email hearnowthenewsjb@gmail.com, and check out my Hear Now the News Facebook page for more content, including special live streams. Back soon with a new episode as I keep up with the latest details from Washington. Thanks for listening to Hear Now the News. I'm Jerry Barmash.